This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Invest Talk. I appreciate you being with me today. And I was not supposed to be here. I was able to make it to the station just before the show because I was up in San Jose all day, and yesterday and today, and Justin was filling in for me. But I made it back, and I thank you for joining us today. Whether you're listening to us on the radio in California or streaming live on InvestTalk.com or subscribing to our podcast, I always appreciate you being here. So thank you very much. If you ask many financial planners, how do I get rich? You're going to get a bunch of different answers, right? But one of the main ways you can get rich is saving. Saving. Of course, taking that savings and investing is the second most important way to get rich. And there's no question, though, saving consistently over a long period of time of your working life is the way you're going to get rich. You got to be consistent about it. But you got to also, you can't just put the money in a mattress. You can't do that either. You have to, if you did that, look how much inflation would eat into it. You've got to grow that money. You've got to. You know, yesterday Justin was preaching to you about budgeting. And without it, you're really, lost in the woods. Maybe you'll find your way out. Maybe. But you're lost. You're lost in that woods. But when you get into saving money, the question, of course, is how much are you saving? Are you saving 3%? That's not nearly enough. You need to save about 10% of your income. Now, if the average household income is $52,000, over the working life, if someone saved that much money, and then it returned 6.86%. Now, why did I pick 6.86%? Because if you go all the way back to the time that we started counting, 1871, what the market has returned, that is what it has returned. By the time you retire, you have $745,000 in today's dollars. Not bad, huh? Average income of $52,000, saving 10%. Now, can you save 10%? Well, this day and age, maybe your employer is helping you match. Maybe he's, getting you up to that 10% range. Whatever you have to do, you have to do. You have to do it. Now, maybe you have some experience you'd like to share with us. I'd like to hear it. It's time to get your voice in on the program. 888-99-CHARGE, the quickest way. And let's move and take a question. This one came in after last night's program. 888-99-CHARGE.
I have a question about index funds. And I would appreciate if you would explain what an index fund is, what are the different kinds of index funds, how would you compare them to a mutual fund or an individual stock, and what are the advantages or disadvantages of buying the index fund. Thank you very much. I love your show, and it's very educational. Thank you very much again.
In actuality, that's a very good question. What is an index fund? An index fund, or an index, is tracking a group of stocks. Now, what particular group of stocks? Well, there's 100 different indexes out there. The Dow Industrial 30 Index, the Dow, that's only 30 companies, 30 very large companies. It's only 30 companies out of the 8,000, 9,000 companies that are traded. So it's very, very narrow. The S&P 500 is 500, basically, of the largest companies in the market. That's pretty narrow, too, but that's what people hear on the news. The Dow is up. The S&P is up. The NASDAQ is up. What's the NASDAQ? NASDAQ is, they're tracking the NASDAQ 100, that's only 100 stocks. Now, they also have other indexes. The Russell indexes. Russell 2000 is one I've talked about quite frequently. Is the small company stocks, but it's 2,000 of them. There's a Russell 3000, which is the bigger company stocks. That's what an index does. It tracks a certain set of stocks. The New York Stock Exchange, NYSE index, is a much broader base market index. But they're not been around there long enough. The Dow is the oldest one, so they use that. What is the advantage of buying an index? Well, you get all that diversification, all those stocks and those indexes that you're investing in. So it gives you instant diversification. You're not relying on just one stock, because one stock could do anything. But a whole index, you know, moves much slower, up and down. You can buy an index with a mutual fund. There's a lot of mutual funds that just track indexes. There's ETFs that just track indexes. And there's mutual funds and ETFs that track all different types of sectors and pieces and bits of the market. So it gets complex, everybody. It always gets complex. It's not a simple thing, but it's a very good question. I appreciate the question. I really do. Now, are target dated funds steering you in the wrong direction or steering you to a disaster? Target dated funds, you know how I feel about them. I'm not keen on them. But if you're going to invest them, you got to invest them in them in the right way. And that's going to be one of our talking points today. Panic selling. You saw the market today. Panic selling is good for the market, isn't it? Isn't it good for the market? It may be painful at the time it's happening. We're going to talk about that. Retail sales in November likely have picked up despite the slow Black Friday weekend. Retail sales. I think we need to talk about it because the number's coming out on Thursday for November. I think we need to discuss it. Remember, why retail sales are so important? Because our economy is 60-70% driven by the consumer and what the consumer does. Spending by the consumer. It's extremely important. And rising risks in the stock market, I have filtered them down to maybe 3 or 4. What are the risks? And I have 10 risks in the stock market, but you know, some of them are kind of almost overlapping a little bit, so I'm going to talk about it. That was something I was going to discuss last week, last Friday, and I didn't get to it, but I wanted to. Okay, we saw lots of volatility today. The Dow is down 266 points. Did you see there was lots of volatility yesterday too? But it didn't end up down that much. But intraday it did. The Dow was down 266 points. That's 1.5%. The NASDAQ was down 81 points. That's 1.7%. And the S&P was down 33 points at 1.6%. So the NASDAQ led the way down. And that would be normal. Leads up and leads down. But it hasn't been leading up. Usually the small stocks lead up. Remember, I've told you that. Let's look at the Russell 2000. The Russell 2000 on December 31st, 2013, the last trading day last year, or almost a full year, the Russell 2000 was at 1163. That the small cap index, 1163. Today, it's 1162. A reason why I'm pointing this out is because when people talk about the Dow and the S&P and they think it's up, okay, it is. It's up. But is that the market? Well, why wouldn't you? What's wrong with the Russell 2000? That's 2,000 companies down 1 point for the year. How many companies are there in the market? 8,000 or so? I don't really know exactly. So, you know, the different parts and overall market, you got to look at what you're. So if your portfolio is full of Russell 2000 stocks, you're probably having a world of painful. You've been painful this year. It's been very painful for you. Not good. So don't think, you know, if you're managing your portfolio and you're not doing that good this year, don't beat yourself up too much. It has not been a very good year. Over 40% on the Russell 2000, or over 40% of those stocks are down about 20% or more. So the other 60% have to be up pretty high to offset those lows to be flat for the year. So it's been a stock picker's market, and it's been pretty volatile. We saw some more volatility. Now, is this volatility we've had recently, the last couple of days, is it saying that the market is not going to collapse? No. There has been not. There's only. It's a warning sign. That's all. It's not something that you panic about. In actuality, you look at the volume, and it's not, even though a big move, the volume is not that strong. There's not that many people selling. But what is interesting is the breadth of the market. That is something that's interesting. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What do you want to talk about? Well, I want to talk about whatever's on your mind, but I got stuff I can bring up. I'm perfectly happy to do that. So one of the things I'd like to bring up, why isn't the U.S. debt a problem? Why is no one talking about it anymore? You notice it's not, it hasn't been in the news for weeks or months. No one's even care. Why? Hopefully I can get to that. We want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is how you reach us. You can do it right now. Your money topic on Invest Talk. And this is Steve Peasley. Justin was going to do the show because I wasn't sure I was going to be able to make it back, but I did. So I'm on today. Don and Cupertino. How you doing, Don?
Well, I'm doing fine, Steve. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
And here's my question. It's
sure.
regarding Rio Tinto. Mm-hmm. They're into metals. They're, I mean, like a lot of stocks like that, they seem to be coming apart at the seams. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at buying some shares, and I would like your opinion on if this is a good time to do that.
You know, I like your thinking, Don. You want to buy things that are on sale. And all this is a mining, Rio Tinto, symbol RIO, UK-based global mining company, metals and minerals. And they've fallen quite hard, okay? They all of them have, all the commodity stocks. We probably at the end of our commodity super cycle because China is now starting to slow down, and they've been a pressure on all commodities for years now. And that pressure is starting to come off a little bit because production mm-hmm. has caught up. Now, I would not jump in it just yet, Don, because Rio Tinto, it has a lot of support right around 40, and right now it's at 43.76. I want to see if it holds 40 because it was last year it hit 40 and bounced up, and all the way back in 2010 it hit 40 and bounced up. In 2011, it hit 40 and bounced up. So I think you want to see it have some strength come into it.
So should I?
Go ahead.
So I mean, would when you say that, should I wait a while longer, wait to see if it hits that 40, and then see what happens from then? If it breaks through that,
you wait longer.
Wait a while longer.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's called support. You're trying to find many of these commodity stocks. Where is support? Is it where does it stop going down? Usually stocks, when they're in very much disfavor, go down to a certain level, the sellers get exhausted, no one wants to own it, and then when you see a trickling of people coming back into it, we call them firm hands and weak hands. The firm hands who want to buy it will hold on to it, and it stops it from going down. And then that's where you want to get it because now it's cheap. Okay?
So would I see that in the volume?
You may not. You may. Volume has been very odd these days. You may not. I think just watch the price and let it trade sideways for a while. Don't be too anxious. I'm looking at oil stocks. I'm waiting for oil to stop going down. And I think oil is setting itself up for a good buy. So I would take a look. Thanks for the call. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and this is Invest Talk.
Thanks for subscribing to our podcast. Here's an amazing factoid. 54% of plan sponsors reported that their 401k participants aren't taking full advantage of their plan's investment options and features and services. Communication is really the key, and it's also really the challenge for employers. Find out more about this solution. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Justin and write in 401k. No one will call you. You'll receive a packet, though, of info about the 401k solution by email.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Don in Pleasant Hill, listening to us on AM 1220. How you doing, Don?
Really well. Yourself?
I'm doing good. Thanks for the call.
Yes. I thought I understood what I was talking about, but apparently I don't. What is the relationship between fracking and the oil companies going down? fracking to me was natural gas, and oil to me would be a different commodity. Am I off base on that?
Yeah, fracking is both oil and natural gas. It's both. Don't separate them in your mind. Fracking produces both. Sometimes they're fracking for oil, and sometimes they're fracking for natural gas. And most of the time, they get both, okay? But, yeah, and why oil is collapsing, I mean, if you want to know that, is because fracking is so successful. and demand has been slowing.
Which just creates a glut.
Yeah, creates a glut. And you got Europe who's slowing down and China who's slowing its growth. We got a glut worldwide in oil. And then you have the OPEC countries saying, you know what, we're not going to slow down our production. We're not going to slow it down. I think they want to try to put fracking under pressure by dropping the price of oil.
So that is going to be hurting the oil-producing fracking side of things, but
yes.
The natural gas fracking side of things will still be going on.
Correct. I don't think it's going to really hurt them too much, really. Okay, Don?
Gotcha. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. And that's one of the reasons. Well, see, remember, there's a lot of small companies fracking out there on the shale areas. And those small companies are funding themselves by junk bonds, issuing bonds, low-grade bonds. And if you look at the junk bonds, you'll see that those things have been falling apart because if oil prices go down, those small companies that are utilizing loans to try to produce oil probably are not going to be able to pay back all those loans. You see how it feeds into each other? And just think about this. You don't think OPEC knows that? Of course they know it. They're hoping that there will be next year or the year after. I don't think they may be wrong, but they're hoping that production will slow and thus oil prices will start to firm up and go back up. That's kind of their hope. They won't say that. Yeah, you're not going to get that. But I don't think, I've talked about it on the show, I don't know if that's going to work. Yes, it'll slow down production because they will slow down drilling. It will lower the price of oil. It's natural. It's going to happen. But will it do it enough to help those countries? I don't know. Panic selling, is it good for the market? Do you see panic selling? I don't see it. I see a big down day of 266 points. I saw a big volatile day yesterday too. But when you look at the volume, I don't see panic. But then on the other side of the coin, if you look at the breadth of the market, I mean, the entire market fell today. Almost everything fell today. Breadth tells you it. I'm kind of thinking it's setting itself up for a good rally market. Now, I don't know how deep this little panic selling or whatever you want to call it. I don't know if we can call it panic selling. I don't know how deep and how far it's going to go down. You know, so far it's been led by oil. So we'll have to see. It's not. If you remember right, the correction we had that was in October, that was really caused by worry about a world growth slowdown. That's what that was really caused by, if you remember. And maybe that's creeping back into the investors, the market's thought process. Slow down world. Why is oil going down so much? The whole world is slowing down. Or there's a glut, just as we just talked about with Don. So is the whole world going to slow down? Is that going to affect our economy? That's the worry. Good. It's going to affect us. You know, if Europe and China slow down, it will affect us. But our major trading partners are Canada and Mexico, not Europe and China. But it will affect us. It's a question of degree, how much. And you know what? So far, even while they're struggling, we're still, the exports have fallen 7% last month. But they're not collapsing. Why are they falling? Probably because more likely our dollar is going up and we're attracting more investments in our country because we look like the strong person in the world, the strong economy in the world. So, you want to put your money where there's strength. And that's what's happened. European money, Chinese money coming over here. So I just can't say we see panic selling at this point. I don't think you should assume that or worry about that. Not yet. We do see some violations. It's like what you're seeing is like the first little red flag out there. Be careful. Looks like we're having some problems. But, you know, that little red flag could easily go away and quickly. I think we should expect some volatility. I think we're going to see a lot more volatility next year. More so we've had this year and more so than we had last year. Last year we had very little. This year we had more. But I think, and you know what? It looks like it's just returning to more of a normal volatility situation. And we haven't been used to it for some time. Interesting. I love this stuff. Why are you spending more and more on your cell phones? InvestTalk Personal is coming up next in the next half hour. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. I'm here to answer your money questions, and you can call at 888-99-CHART. Our podcast listeners are from all over the world, and they download our program, which is really great. For those long-distance listeners who listen at their own schedule, we have our 24-hour listener line, which you can call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Brooks from Richmond, Virginia. I appreciate your program. Listen to it on podcast. Last week, I believe there was a brief discussion about stock GGN, that's Golf November. It's a closed-in fund for global gold natural resources. I just had a question. If you could possibly explain a good way to calculate valuations on closed-end funds, I'd appreciate it. Also, judging by the stock, GGN, it's been going down quite a bit lately, I believe due possibly to some of the oil prices. I wanted to know if you feel that now is a good time to buy for a long-term hold. I will listen to your answer on podcast. Thanks, and have a great day.
Okay, GGN is a closed-end fund investing in equity securities of companies engaged in gold and natural resource industries. It pays a 12% dividend yield. That's what's so attractive about it. And it pays it monthly. And that's what I mentioned last week. That's what makes it really attractive. But if it's going down, and it has been going down almost all year. Okay, actually it was going up at the beginning of the year, then falling. But it has been falling steadily since 2011. Okay, it has. So when is it going to stop? Where is the end? And again, I think you need to wait. If you're going to try to buy it now, I think you need to wait to see if it stops going down. You like to see some sideways movement. And it went sideways most of November. And then, of course, oil started to just fall apart, which is a natural resource, right? And it drove it down further. Meanwhile, gold has stabilized. So it's a tough call on this one, as I mentioned last week. I think you'd still need to wait. I'd like to see it trade sideways again. At some point, it'll move sideways, and you really kind of want to see it have some strength before you buy it. If you own it, you've ridden it down all this way. It's at $6.83 now. You know, there's an argument. You might as well just hold on to it because you are getting 12% yield. Kind of, no. How to evaluate was his question. ETFs are difficult to evaluate because they hold different things. And this one actually is even more difficult because they do commodity trading. They do option trading inside it. They do different things. So it's very difficult to know what the value of it is. I think you just got to watch the chart, and you own it because you're looking for that dividend. At some point, the dividend is so attractive, it'll bring buyers in because it's still earning the dividend because of what it does. Okay, GGN, everybody. InvestTalk Personal, about the everyday money decisions we make that have lasting impact. Why are we spending more and more on cell phones? The average monthly cell phone bill has soared in recent years to well over $100. A study earlier this year found that Verizon was the most expensive carrier, believe it or not, with an average customer bill of $148 a month. Now that might be because they might be most expensive because people are, they're the best. That might be. Their services are so good, people want to buy them. And, you know, so don't think it, don't equate expensive with, well, I can get it cheaper somewhere else. Maybe you don't want to. There are more and more handful of reasons, okay? There are more than a handful of reasons. One is taxes are up. Do you know you pay 17% of taxes on your phone bill? Federal, state, local taxes and fees, 17%. On our dollar bill, that 17 bucks goes to the Uncle Sam and everybody else, all the other people. And fees are sneaking in. The cell phone companies are sneaking in fees like activation fees. So we're and plus, you know, we are eating up more and more data. We're doing more and more things on the phone, and it takes power to do that. It takes bandwidth that the companies have to pay for, so they have to pass that along. And you're not seeing too many unlimited plans anymore. Flat rates, unlimited plans, you're not. Another reason why, more and more children are clamoring for smartphones to play with or make phone calls. Many plans have three or more phones on them these days. Of course, that's going to drive up the monthly bill. And we're getting rid of our landlines at the same time. So what do you do? Look for cheaper services. Choose a lower cost, simpler phone. Cut back on usage. Those things you can do. I don't see that happening, though. I really don't. Maybe a cheaper service. That's InvestTalk Personal. If there's an investment topic you'd like to know more about, let me know. Just go to InvestTalk.com, click on the Contact Justin or Contact Steve button there. Or you can call 888-99-CHART and just leave a message.
Why not sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider? If you missed our last webinar, a virtual retirement checklist, including easy-to-follow directions on how to use some new free online software, you can watch and replay when you're ready. It's there for all InvestTalk Insiders. Sign up for free on InvestTalk.com.
Hello, my name is Matt in Hilliard, Ohio. I'm listening on iTunes. I was wondering if you could give me your opinion on TNH, Terra Nitrogen Holdings, LP. I was wondering what you thought about the stock and if the dividend was sustainable. Thank you very much. Bye.
TNH, Terra Nitrogen, it's out of Deerfield, Iowa. Manufactured fertilizer, including ammonia nitrate and ammonia used by farmers to improve crop yield and quality. And just like everything else, it's a commodity-driven kind of industry, and it's been collapsing. Commodities have been under a lot of pressure. This fell to $92.02, and just a month ago, it was $139. That tells you how fast this has fallen. And it's been falling all year long. You see, there's certain parts of the market have done very poorly this year. And those people who have these kinds of stocks have been getting hit. They're seeing the indexes up, and they can't figure out why they're not working. And you know, part of this is, you know, because there's a very, the market has different parts. Anyway, back to TNH. I don't want to get too much into that. Is it worth it? Well, it pays a yield of 7.7%. Cash flow is still pretty darn strong. So I think that they'll be able to maintain that yield. And that was your question. Can they maintain the yield? Sales have fallen 4 out of the last 5 quarters. The most recent quarter, sales were up 5%. Problem is they're probably less, the sales might be moving up, but the price that they have to charge is a problem. Because, you know, they're not probably getting a good price. I'd have to check. That's when you start checking their profit margins. To check margins. Are they being squeezed? Are they stabilizing? That's what you want to look at. The company is not in any danger of any kind. It has no debt. It makes money. It has great cash flow still. The stock has just been hit. Now, the stock is now pretty darn attractive. Remember I always give out 5-year range of P.E. ratios, 7 to 20? Well, this one's, for this one, the 5-year P.E. ratio is 7 to 20. And current P.E. is 7, right at its bottom of its range. So that would make me start to look at it. But I want to see if it stops falling. You want it, because it's been accelerating recently, the last 4 or 5 days in its fall. Wait until it stops falling. There's an old saying my partner used to always tell me, don't try to catch a falling knife. Wait till it falls, stops falling, and then you pick it up. Just be patient. Be patient. TNH, everybody. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, let's talk about, I want to discuss 401ks with target-dated funds. Now, I'm not a big fan of target-dated funds. But apparently, people are using them incorrectly. Target-dated funds are supposed to be, you are a certain age and you're retiring 20 years from today. That means you buy a target-dated fund 2035, okay, because it's almost 2015, 20 years. That's the concept. Whatever your retirement date is when you pick the date. A lot of people are not even doing that. Remember, I don't really care for them that much, but you're not using them the way they're designed. And if you're not going to use them for the way they're designed, it even becomes a worse investment. And this is not something where I'm making up. There was a study that showed that's exactly what people are doing, a lot of people. 38% of savers investing in target-dated funds are using them as a one-stop investment, according to Aon Hewitt Financial Engines. Well, that's fine. But a very large percentage of them are not picking the right target date. Why? They're trying to manipulate it somehow, or they don't know. I don't really know why. I mean, they're saying from 2010 to 2012, partial target date fund users earned a medium of 2.1% less each year after fees were taken into account than those in the same age group who invested at least 95% of their portfolio in the appropriate target dated funds. You're making less money because you're not in the right one. I don't care for target date funds. I've said that several times. I'll keep saying I don't. And you've heard my reasons. But if you're going to use them, try to use them correctly in your 401k. Use it based on what your retirement is. Now, I have specific reasons why I don't like them. And if you want to know what them, you can email me or ask me the question on the air, and I'll tell you. I've said it over and over and over again, so I don't want to beat a dead horse. How about a good money-saving idea for your boss? Here's a way to reduce administrative costs and enhance the employee benefit package. It's called the 401k solution from us, KPP Financial. You can get all the material you need and pass along to your employer by going to investtalk.com. InvestTalk.com, two T's, and click on Contact Justin and write in 401k. We'll have a packet of information that will give you some good options.
Another information source to help you improve your investing skills and gain you some stress-relieving perspective is our KPP Premium Newsletter. It comes out each Friday. And one of the most popular features is our Stock Watch. At least a couple of companies are introduced to you to watch in each edition. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com today.
Hi, I'm a trustee of a family member who passed away. There are some bonds in there, and of course these are individual bonds. They couldn't be dispersed individually, obviously. They had to be sold. I just talked to the Wells Fargo advisors today. Apparently, one of the bonds didn't sell because even though it doesn't mature till 2018, there was a call on it. And the first call came in 5/7, and they said they thought it'd be called, but it wasn't. And they moved that call date up, and so apparently people aren't willing to go out and buy this thing now because of this call thing. I guess my thing is it can't be dispersed like it is. Can they just continually to move this call date up until they think they want to go ahead and buy it back and refinance at a lower interest or what?
Yes, they can. The answer to that is yes, they can. I hate callable bonds. It's one of the, I don't want to say I hate them. I try to avoid them because of the call part. I don't like that. He's just described one of the problems you have. If you want to sell a bond and it's callable, and they've already called it, but call it doesn't mean that, remember, they're not calling necessarily every bond that's callable. Maybe they're saying of the $100 million in callable bonds, we want to call in 50 million of them. Well, which 50 million? Who owns them? What if they get the 50 million and yours didn't get called? You still have a call date. Now, no one wants your bond because they feel it might be called. See, so bonds are not as liquid as stocks. Now, that's why you hear me say, buy bonds and hold them to maturity. Just assume that you're going to hold them to maturity. Buy them with the intent to hold them to maturity. But then you get this situation. This poor guy, you know, is an executive of estate. He's got to liquidate these assets so he can pay, and he's not able to do it. He's having trouble doing it. I would call the broker and explain the situation, what may happen if it's a big brokerage firm. They may buy it from you. Okay, they may not give you the greatest price, but they might buy it from you and hold it in their own portfolio. And especially if you have a good working relationship, you may not because you inherited these things. But that's what I would do. Say, look, I'm an executor. I need to liquidate this. How can I get rid of this? And I think that would be your only solution, because these broker firms can buy these and hold them in their portfolio. Let them worry about it. They'll do it. They just won't give you a good price. Here's our InvestTalk definition of the day. GNP, gross national product. GNP is a measure of a country's economic performance, or what its citizens produce, i.e. goods and services, and whether they produce these items within its border. GNP. Do you have a question about an investment term or economic term? Give me a call. 888-99-CHART. We're moving into the last segment of the hour. We've got about 10 minutes left. Let's see if we can get your question in. There's a line open. You can call 888-99-CHART.
Are there special rules when you're investing in growth stocks? Or what's your question? Why not ask it right now at 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk. You're listening to our podcast produced 5 days a week, and we thank you for being here. Also, if you like a professional review of your retirement portfolio, even though you may live out of range of our California offices, it can still be done using email, fax, and phone. To begin the process, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Schedule a Meeting heading under Steve's picture, and someone will get right back to you.
Retail sales in November are likely to have picked up. We're going to get that report coming out tomorrow, I think it is. Thursday? Yeah, Thursday. You know, the Black Friday weekend was not very good. It was down like 11%. But the reason why it was down 11% was twofold. First, many of the bigger companies, Walmart and Target, they started their sales way before Black Friday. So if you talk about the whole month of November, it's probably going to pick up about 0.4%. But if you take out autos, it's probably only going to be up 0.1%. And most people are going to say, oh, that's not very good. And they'd be wrong. Why would they be wrong? Why? Very, very simple answer. Part of retail sales is gasoline prices. Right? That's retail sales. So that retail sales actually went down if you count gasoline sales. I mean, it didn't go went up 0.1%. Now this is the estimates, by the way, so we're not sure what it's going to be until we get the report. But when you talk about gasoline prices and gasoline, for every 1 cent that goes down in gasoline prices, that represents about $1 billion in household energy consumption down. Less. And so gasoline has fallen about $1 a gallon since June. That dollar gallon, what does that mean? That means it's about $90 billion over the next couple of quarters extra in people's pockets. Yes, it shows up as less retail sales, but now they have more money to buy something else. right? So if gasoline prices stay low for a longer period of time, and I think they are for a longer period of time, that's only going to be beneficial to our economy. It's like a tax break, and a decent-sized tax break at that. The lower the oil prices, the more money in the consumer's pocket. Now, remember, there's always the yin and yang. The lower the oil prices, the more volatile the stock market's going to be, the more scared it will be. The more oil companies that are marginal, small ones, are going to go out of business, hurting employment on that industry. There's always good and plus and minuses, but I think this is a much bigger plus overall for the economy than a minus. I think that. And, you know, it's their own success is hurting them. And we can easily be oil independent if we wanted to be. We could easily be there in 10 years or so, because we're increasing more and more and more. What we're going to have to do is we're going to have to export some of it. And I know people are up in arms, export it, no. Oil's priced internationally at international prices. You know, we want to export more. We do. Right now, you cannot export oil. Did you know that? The United States cannot export oil. They can export refined products. And, of course, they cheat a little bit. How much? What's the refined product? How refined? Just a little bit refined? See? But I'm just saying, it's against the law to export oil at this point. Let's answer one more question before we're... Oh, gosh, we're running out of time. Really, real quick then. The rising risk in the stock market, Washington politics. You know there's going to be fighting. There always is. Rising interest rates. The Fed has said they're targeting interest rate rise maybe next year or the year after. They won't tell you exactly. And slowing growth internationally and possibly domestically. Those are things that are going to worry the stock market. The three major things that could affect the stock market. And I do think those are going to result in more volatility. But remember, the market, slowing growth, the economy has some good momentum going forward. I do think we're going to have GDP growth, and I think it's going to be a little bit better next year than this year. Could not be. I mean, I'm not an expert on this, but I think it might. Before we close for the hour, be sure to sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider. One of the benefits are regular watch lists, like one on large energy stocks. A list that are big worldwide integrated energy plays that might be setting themselves up for a good buy, especially if you're looking for dividends. You buy things when they're cheap, maybe not yet. So sign up for free at InvestTalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein, everybody at KPP Financial, thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.